Today is Monday, January the 14th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County Superintendent of Schools, Mr. Hartley. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning to you, Brian. Happy, it's not such a new year anymore. We're in the 14th.
Happy New Year to you. Happy January, huh?
Exactly. Yeah. Happy January.
Oh. Are you ready for our Why Do We Say That?
Well, of course.
Okay. Let's see. Some of these things are really kind of a little bit more archaic than I... Chalk Eater, but that has nothing to do with education. I wouldn't want to set you up on that one.
That was the pre-detention years.
Yeah. All righty. Chowder. Where does the word chowder come from?
I don't know, but I like clam chowder.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of that.
Chowder is supposed to have been invented by the housewives of Brittany. The term comes from the French word for the cauldron in which they made their chowders.
All right.
Chowdery.
So I was on the right track.
Which in turn comes from chowd, which means hot.
Very good.
See? Yeah.
There you go.
Culinary.
Another thought for the day.
Culinary on Monday.
We love food.
Yeah. Last time we got together, you were concerned because nobody had any kind of read on now Governor Newsom.
That's right.
What the priorities might be, what they might not be. I believe categorical funding versus, okay, guys, here's your pool of money.
Right.
Hit the numbers.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Any clarification on that?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, he released his budget last week, at the end of last week, and so we've been taking some time to digest his budget. And, you know, we're really pleased with his approach to maintaining that that local control that you were just speaking of. Funding, keeping the LCFF, the local control funding formula, going for school districts. There's your first acronym of the day.
All right. Hey, yeah, it only took, a minute?
Yeah. There's plenty more.
I bet.
Yeah, you know, so we're happy with that. And so he came out with the proposal. He's supporting that that model where districts can still have the opportunity to make decisions around their fiscal, what they receive, around their district needs. And so that was a big big win for us. We're really pleased with that.
Who is in charge, or the financial in charge of the K-12 or K-14 funding at the state? Who does that? Is that the lieutenant governor?
Well, you have the Department of Finance. They have a lot to do with that funding, and they kind of bridge the work between the California Department of Education, and so the Department of Finance and the governor's office, and then you know, your legislators.
Everybody that at least comes on this show seems to think that Mike McGuire is doing a bang-up job, responsive, all that kind of stuff. So that part is always encouraging. Now that he's got a position of even more influence.
Yeah, on the education committee?
Yeah,
for sure.
What does that mean for local area schools?
Well, it's great. First of all, we do enjoy working with Senator McGuire. He is community-minded and listens when we come to him with issues around students and the needs that we have in Humboldt County. And so having a position on the education committee is great. It allows us to advocate for our special needs that we have here and gives us a voice, you know, in a committee that's making decisions and bringing propositions forward. And
has it been responsive?
For me, at this point, it's still too early to tell, since we're just kind of getting rolling with this next school year. We do have our Ledge Action Day plan, though, for Humboldt County. This will be the second year that we've done that. So I started that last year with Humboldt County superintendents. And we look forward to going down there on March 18th with another contingent. I've got at least 10 local superintendents that will be joining me this year. And we'll spend some time talking to Senator McGuire as well as many other folks. But
so this is a new position that the senator is in?
I believe, Brian, he went into that last year at some point last year.
So he's still kind of coming up to speed on what
I'm not sure. We just haven't had conversations yet with regards to specific education initiatives and the role on that Ed Committee. But when he's on the committee, you know, when any of us, when you're sitting on a committee, you get to bring your lens and your understanding to the conversations that happen in that committee. You know, and so that voice alone is powerful as they're considering decisions and they're making recommendations and ultimately deciding what kind of legislation to support, you know, as things progress into the next year.
In your wildest, crazy, non-drunk induced state.
Oh, God.
What would you see as the best case scenario for public education in the upcoming budget cycle? Is there anything that gets within reason?
Sure.
Really, really, really possibly cool things, or is it more status quo of what and consistency?
Sure. You know, what we are really excited about are any of the proposals or initiatives that the state can run with that are proactive in nature. And so, meaning, you know, early education, preventative strategies. We've talked on this show several times about the needs here locally with regards to particular special education, mental health issues for students, trauma in our community. And we're really good at reacting. And so anything that we can see support from the state that allows us to start to get ahead of the game, get a little more proactive, start getting, you know, problem solving on the front end instead of reacting all the time, would be, to me, for our local needs, very important. And we see some of that in the budget. And so in the budget, there's additional dollars for early education, universal kindergarten, some state preschool funding. You know, so this governor is showing signs of that. In addition, we've talked on this show before about the importance of public agencies working together. And so there seems to be some language in the budget that's going to promote more public agency cooperation. In one area, looking at how to help schools do Medi-Cal billing. So some of those simple things like that, you know, can help us with some preventative strategies.
Medi-Cal because of the nurses and some of the...
Sure, sure. Any student that happens to be in your school where the family's on Medi-Cal, schools at this point largely aren't able to bill for that. And so this could be an additional federal funding stream to support schools for the work that they're frankly already doing.
That's an artist rendition of a big carrot. It's kind of weak. But, you know, it's another reason.
You know your vegetables. That's good.
It's another reason why we don't stream.
That's good to see you. Yeah, you got your vegetables down, though. That's good.
No in-studio camera here, baby. It's 8:19.
Thank you.
We know you love Easy Radio, singing out loud, really out loud, to your favorite songs. But what about when you're traveling out of the area? Easy Radio can be heard throughout the area on 910 AM and 104.1 FM in Curry and Del Norte counties. And if you're in Humboldt County, 980 AM. That's Easy Radio, 910 AM in Brookings, 104.1 FM in Del Norte and Curry County, and 980 AM in Humboldt County. Good radio is easy.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Chris Hartley. Chris, the concept of proactive is something I think a lot of folks, you know, the criminal justice system has been trying to do that. I guess the Great Society
from
LBJ has been trying. You know, I we can argue whether or not who has won the war on poverty. Yeah, in 55 years, we should be seeing some kind of a, yeah. Anyway.
A little shift would be good.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. When you're looking at things like mental health.
Yes, sir.
Where statewide, we've doubled our population and we have less capacity today than we did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you say mental health, that triggers all kinds of things in my head about those that really would benefit or should benefit or need to benefit from that. In the educational model, is this one of those, the gift that keeps on giving, passed through generation to generation? Is this a genetic shift that's going on? Mm. Is this kids, and I'm presuming it's the kids, not the parents that we're talking about, who don't have coping skills or social skills to be able to process things and just kind of work through?
Yeah.
When you say mental health in the public ed, how does that manifest itself?
Well, the complicated part, it's a little bit of everything you just said, you know, and every student is unique and an individual. So common trends that we would see here, you know, locally have a lot to do with the kind of social condition of the environment that a lot of kids are growing up in. And we know that in our community, the adverse childhood experiences, you've heard that one before. The survey that was done or the research that was done locally is that our adult population in Humboldt County has a pretty high level of ACEs, adverse childhood experiences. And so, meaning they've had a great deal of trauma in their life over time. And that can transcend to their their children.
So this is an intergenerational.
Yeah, it can be, sure. And so we see some of those things. And a lot of times it's not like, you know, a big giant buzzword, mental health. It can be just that some of these students just need somebody to decompress with when they get to school first thing in the morning. They need to be
You're like a
to,
teacher to talk
yeah,
to?
Well, like a just, kind of thing? Or just a counselor that's not in charge of having to try to teach an entire class. That's part of the problem is a lot of our teachers have had to become mental health counselors, and but at the same time, they're required to teach. And so they're balancing, you know, a lot of different roles in our school system today than I do believe in the past. I think now, that has been a shift. And so
now when we were growing up though, you know, if certain teachers ran off to the lunchroom, teachers kept their room open and the kids would kind of hang out and talk and be at,
hang out at lunch during the break.
Same thing with coaches and that kind of stuff. So there's kind of been a tradition of some of that, but it sounds like this is different.
Yeah, this is different. These are students coming to school that, you know, have maybe had a really tough night or had a really tough morning just getting there, and having folks available at the school to help serve those youngsters and those children. Get them off on a good foot for that day is something that can be a mental health support system right there. To higher levels of need where there maybe is some therapy that's needed for a student that's got dealing with some really serious stuff. And so what we do know, you know, it goes back to Maslow and all those guys that talked about educational learning, is your basic needs have to be met in order for you to be able to engage in your education. So there you go. You got the pyramid going there.
Oh, right.
I see it. But I mean, you know, that's basic stuff, and it's common sense. You know, that we've got to help serve the nutritional needs of children, their mental health needs, just, you know, to have a platform to be able to learn from.
If you look at state, if you want to look at the state, if you want to look at the country, a lot of these things are not specific to us. The degrees obviously vary
for sure.
Community by community.
Absolutely.
Fair enough. Is the school... Does the school population mirror the general population? So when we talk about drug use here, when we talk about alcohol use here, when we talk about abuse here, if our levels are in excess of the norm, okay, you guys are going to see it. If it's below, you're going to see that. Or does the young population, is it different than the adult population?
Well, it certainly depends on the age level. I think our younger children obviously aren't, you know, engaging in drugs and using alcohol to excess and those sorts of things, you know, but as they get older, I mean, if it's available and it's in your community, sure. I think there's a proportional, again, a common sense factor there that could be related. I don't have data to show that, but I think if you have a community where those are issues for your community, they're going to surface in your schools, of course. They're microcosms of the community.
But to the same extent is what, is it a leading or is it a trailing?
Yeah,
so if we start
one.
To see, yeah. Let's say, you know, back, I almost said good old days. Let's say back when we were younger, cocaine use. Okay, that was the cool,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So that went up. Well, did cocaine use also go up in school, the high school and junior high population or not?
Yeah, I have a hard time. I have no idea. You know,
those types of things.
That's a great conversation. As far as like any specific data on it, I don't know. But what we do know is a healthy community is beneficial to the schools and beneficial to the children, right? And so that we do know. And we do know that schools are a microcosm of their community. And they're really the first point of entry for service, particularly in rural communities. When you think about, you look at some of our smaller districts out there, the school's district is the community hub, right? And so it's natural that we should provide more services to children and families within the school setting kind of deal with that whole child concept that goes back, you know, many years as far as theory goes.
So as you were discussing proactive,
yeah.
Now with this as a backdrop, is it proactive to work with the kids or proactive to work with the parents in this generation and mm-hmm. try to stem the tide, so to speak.
No, it's both.
To use an acronym.
There you go. Nicely done.
KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:30.
As a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Chris Hartley. Still thawing out?
No, I'm feeling good now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a little chilly this morning, and I did blast the heater in that car, I can guarantee you that.
Yeah,
and,
if you drive with the windows down.
It doesn't work
as well as when they're
up. They were up, just
another opportunity there to get some insight.
Nice and chilly.
Talk Shop presented this morning by CDH Painting, Redeck, Humboldt Termite and Pest Control, and Murphy's Markets. Chris, as you're looking at some of the challenges that education does have, certainly the monies are there, the structural elements are there. Market expectations are there also. And I would think whether it's mental health related or funding related or whatever related, that education is also dealing with the my kid is blank, just as if it's talking about the individual. Well, I'm...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you need to pay attention to my opinion.
Right.
My bump, 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 and shifting responsibility away from me to responsibility for the outcome to somebody else. How much has that influenced the educational experience of the kids these days? Not peer from mom and dad.
Right.
But just their attitudes, their experiences. And let's not even get into the social media stuff, but... their experiences, do you see that the youngsters, have they had that shift in attitude also?
As far as them wanting to advocate for their own?
You owe me blank. Yeah. I'm not successful because that teacher didn't teach me right.
Yeah, but personally, I haven't experienced a lot of that. I guess I would use the word entitlement. We've always had some folks that feel a little more entitled than others. So I personally haven't sensed that there's a shift of more young people that feel more entitled than when I started in education. I think what young people want is an opportunity to learn as much material and to become an expert in as many subjects, to have choices. And that's what we're really working for, particularly my experience at the high school. What we want a graduate to have is options, not necessarily take lane A. But we want you to be able to merge into any one of those four lanes in front of you. It could be college, it could be, and we're doing a lot of work right now here locally in career in the area of working with a private industry sector to help inform youngsters that there's a lot of opportunities here just in the vocations, electrician, construction work, healthcare. So we're doing a lot more of that now. I think, if anything, students today have a lot more information in front of them with regards to options. Than I can remember in high school myself. It didn't seem like there was a whole lot of talk about options. It was kind of like, you're going to do this or you're going to do that, and you kind of take your path, and there you go.
Jump in the stream, and
yeah,
it takes you.
Yeah, pretty much, right? Yeah. And I would say now our students are more informed than ever before with regards to what's in front of them, and we still have a long way to go, particularly in the area of careers. And
I literally was a B student in high school.
Yeah.
3.0.
Well, I was,
boom.
I had you beat by a 0.14.
Oh, way to go.
I was a 3.14.
You show off.
That's me. That was it. I was really rocking it.
Oh. It seems like for a lot of us, our perception is that everything is geared for the A students or the F students.
That's the common.
The B to D kids.
Sure.
The regular guys and gals.
Yeah.
Tend to be overlooked, but I know that there's been a fair amount of emphasis trying to encourage those folks that are the vast majority of our population to be able to recognize things, those options that you were talking about. What outreach is going on to them, or where they haven't fallen off, so they don't get that attention, and they're not jumping on the rocket to the moon, so they don't get that attention. They're just the vast majority of the tweeners.
Well, I think, you know, the information and the supports are available for all students. I guess people always say, well, those that are at the higher end, they get more attention because they've got more maybe AP courses or more advanced opportunities. Well, you got to provide those opportunities because you have students that want to pursue them. And then those at the bottom are getting more services. Well, yeah, because they need more services. So as far as the group in the middle, you know, I don't think anybody goes through their day and going, I'm going to make sure I talk to that student in the middle today, right? I just don't think it's come to that kind of stream of consciousness. But the opportunities are there. The information is there. What we would like to do is to help students advocate for themselves and for the student in the middle or wherever to find, hopefully find something in school that they can get passionate about. And that sometimes will flip a switch for somebody who's kind of treading water. And in some cases, to be honest with you, that's okay too, because you're still trying to figure things out. And not everybody's going to be taking an AP course, and not everybody needs tons of extra support and services. And I don't see anything wrong with that, as long as we're offering a good comprehensive program for all students. You're going to find your lane at some point. That's, I think, the main thing is for us not to forget that, and that we need to have diverse learning experiences in schools, but also in our community, so that hopefully that student who's kind of in the middle trying to figure it out will get motivated by something. There'll be a spark that comes along. You know, it could be a club, it could be sports, it could be a particular subject, it could be, you know, going out to a construction site and hanging out and watching what those guys and gals do. I think that's where we've gotten better, is we provide a lot more diverse learning opportunities in schools today than ever before.
Are there many students, and this probably goes back to before you were at the Franklin site, that will take an AP in one subject matter but will be a C student? A regular guy, but, you know, this is the one area.
Yeah, they love history.
And they go off in that direction, and they're just a stellar in that one.
Sometimes it's pretty – it wouldn't be the most common thing. I think most students are taking advanced placement. They have the skills to do it, but they also have the motivation to apply it towards college credit, and they're gearing up for something like that. But occasionally, you know, you'll have a student who takes something that they're passionate about. The way I would like to see it work more often is the AP students taking, like, an automotive class. A wood shop class, because it's cool and it's exciting and it's something new and it's an elective, but that's really hard to do in today's schedule because they're so packed with all these requirements that they have to take.
That's what I was going
to
ask you.
I'd like to see it go the opposite direction, to be honest with you, Brian.
Is this the UC pushing down really constricting kids rather than saying because? And I think the thing that is really most incredulous was the word that popped in my head.
Well, it's heavy duty.
I know. Can't spell it, but I can say it, I think. Is that they talk about wanting to have a well-rounded student.
Right.
Show me your grades, but really, show me everything else. Forcing the kids to take the classes they really are precluding and limiting that opportunity for the kids to go out and do these other things because, you know, unless they're really together, they've got so much more studying to do. They can't go out and volunteer with this group or that group or do these various things.
Sometimes I've felt, you know, that it's a bit of the tail wagging the dog on the A through G UC system. But the courses are important. The challenges can
not
be
to
as
denigrate
local.
That.
Yeah, for sure. The challenges can be as localized as just what kind of schedule your school has. Are you on a six period? Can you only take six classes a day? Meaning you don't have as many opportunities to take an elective because of the schedule that the school's running. So you have some schools, you know, have gone to more of a block schedule and ways of cutting things up where you actually take more subjects. Everything has its pros and its cons, though, right? There's not a perfect answer for any of it. But certainly having a diverse array of programs is an important thing that everybody's trying to do.
Choices. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:44.
Hey, Humboldt County. The folks at Fly Humboldt want to say thank you for all your support. The new Los Angeles flight is a great success. The planes have been full, so book now for your holiday travel. Don't miss getting a flight home for the holidays. And just in case you haven't heard, we'll have direct flights to Denver starting June 7th. You'll only be a couple hours away from the Mile High City whenever you want to go. This makes connecting to the world even easier. Get more information at flyhumboldt.org or email us at info@flyhumboldt.org. Happy holidays.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Times, 8:47. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Chris Hartley. Chris, is there anything that's going on with the LA teacher strike that's starting today that has got your attention or that you're following specifically?
You know, I've kept up to speed on it a bit. I know there was some local coverage that was done on the strike as well. I think, you know, as far as paying attention to it, sure, anytime there's a labor dispute in education, we're paying attention. You know, it's an important part of our work with our colleagues, and you know, we want teachers in classrooms. We want good labor relations, and so to see a strike is never something to take lightly. In LA, that's huge. I can't even imagine what that's like. Trying to work through that situation, and so I hope that they can come to terms as soon as possible. Because at the end of the day, you know, it's the children that we're
trying to serve. It's still kids, yeah. What's the labor situation right now here? Are there any contracts that are coming up for negotiation? Or are you in
every district's on its own negotiation cycle. There will be some districts that I believe everybody's settled for the current year, and that sounds weird because we're halfway through the school year. But sometimes you're still working things out. And so folks will start to look at their, depending if they are on a one-year contract or a two-year, they'll start preparing for next year and typically start negotiations, you know, May or so, and doing their reopeners and stuff. The interesting trend up here locally and within the state has been one-year contracts. And that goes back to the recession. We used to be able to do, you know, a couple-year contracts.
Yeah, two or three years was normal, wasn't it?
Yeah, because the finances were more stable and you kind of knew what was coming. And then when the recession hit, you know, we went to one-year contracts, and we went to one-year contracts sometimes with, you know, it depends clauses. Let's see what if we get a budget cut in January, you know, so contingencies would be the formal word for that. And so it's a big part of what schools do in districts is with labor negotiations. And it's something, you know, that not a whole lot of people really enjoy, to be quite honest with you.
It's a tough
position for districts and their employees to be negotiating all the time. It's our reality here in California.
So with the seeming priority at the governor now,
right,
is that backing it up to a two-year, or is it still 1 year by and large, but it's not as nasty? Or is it tough?
It's too early to tell. And, you know, it really depends on each district, because each district's doing their own negotiations with their own labor unit. And to me, that still is the strangest thing ever. There's no other public agency in the state that does that kind of work. So I guess it'll be to be continued.
Just remember, you chose the job.
Thanks for coming by. I love it.
See everybody tomorrow.